Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we take a look back at 2015 through the lens of our most popular feature, Numbnuts of the Week. That's right, an all Numbnuts episode to warm the cockles of your climate change battered little hearts. And it will culminate in the first ever Nuclear Hot Seat Numbnuts of the Year Award, given for ultimately really, really bad behavior. Today is Tuesday, December 29, 2015. And here is the Nuclear Hot Seat year-end special.
Nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
So what qualifies as a Numbnuts of the Week? The concept emerged in the early days of Nuclear Hot Seat, when some of the actions I was reporting on were so stupid, short-sighted, dim-witted, tone-deaf, and otherwise evidence of extreme mental illness that they defied comprehension. As I state in the opening every week, these are the times when the nuclear experts get it wrong. In searching my vocabulary for an appropriate term to call this, the word that emerged was one I had never used before in my life. Numbnuts, spelled with a Z like hip-hop at the end. Now, various online sources define numbnuts as a slang term used to depict someone or something that is a constant source of trouble. An individual who screws up, makes mistakes, botches a job, event, or situation all the time. And also, the situation that results. Well, if that doesn't describe the nuclear industry and its experts, I don't know what does. For Numbnuts of the Week, I tend to avoid the big stories of massive screw-ups that are so painful to read about by such major players as Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe baby, and the Japanese government. Here in the U.S., the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Environmental Protection Agency, as well as other international nuke-boosting organizations. That's because these stories are generally covered at length elsewhere in the news or during interviews. I tend to use numbnuts for the quirky little stories around the massive issues, which springboard into easily missed insights on how skewed nuclear thinking is on all levels. Let's start out with a TEPCO goodie from Nuclear Hot Seat number 206, on January 2, 2015.
Nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, numbnuts of the week.
Well, whoopee and ring-a-ding-ding. An expensive new facility to provide Fukushima Daiichi workers with hot meals, a place to relax, and an opportunity to socialize was unveiled on June 1st by Tokyo Electric Power Company. How college dorm lounge of them. Why, they are even furnishing it with appliances made by companies that operate manufacturing plants in Fukushima. Mm-mm-mm. Just what those workers wanted. Fukushima plant chief Akira Ono said, "This facility represents fulfillment of our pledge to provide better working conditions for the people who have been working so hard at Fukushima Daiichi. I'm glad that by the start of providing warm meals to our workers, their health would be more secured and communication enhanced." Let's get real. beyond the sheer simple-minded inanity of this blatant PR ploy, this workers' Disneyland of delight, nobody bothered to mention that on May 21st, Japan's Nuclear Regulation Authority announced that they're going to increase the radiation exposure limit for workers in emergency situations, meaning Fukushima Daiichi on an ongoing basis, from the current 100 millisieverts to 250 millisieverts. To put that in perspective, nuclear workers are allowed to receive a dose of 20 millisieverts per year. If that limit is exceeded in any year, the worker cannot undertake nuclear duties for the remainder, which is what led to cases of radiation badges, dosimeters at Fukushima Daiichi being covered over with lead tape so the numbers would not register accurately. And seeing as workers regularly exceed 100 millisieverts in the course of a year, even the Yakuza hasn't been able to bring in enough untraceable homeless people to work on site to be able to fill the demands of management. So if you can't guarantee safety, just raise the limits and voila! The illusion of safety is complete. Doesn't change the science, but who cares about science or radiation damage to workers' bodies when the illusion of safety can be manipulated and all those nukes all over Japan with all of its earthquakes and volcanoes blowing their tops can be restarted. And how bad can it be? Well, according to the Biological Effects of Ionizing Radiation 7, the BIR-7 report from the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, there is no exposure to ionizing radiation that is risk-free. Each 1 millisievert of radiation exposure is associated with an increased risk of all forms of cancer, other than leukemia, of about 1 in 10,000. For leukemia, it's 1 in 100,000. That means that an exposure of 250 millisieverts raises the chance of all forms of cancer to 1 in 40, and leukemia to be 1 in 400. Further, in August of 2011, then Prime Minister Naoto Kan's office was questioned about the issue of acute radiation exposure. And a representative for Deputy Cabinet Secretary of Public Relations, Noriyuki Shikata, pointed to the Japanese government having received a report from TEPCO that about 6 of their workers had been exposed to more than 250 millisieverts. That's right, TEPCO and the government equated acute radiation exposure with a dose of 250 millisieverts. So I am certain that the workers at Fukushima Daiichi are all going to be warmed to their heart. Created on appliances made by companies operating manufacturing plants in Fukushima, are going to feel better, more secure, enhanced, their health so well taken care of by the warm meals that are going to be given to them in TEPCO's expansive new facility at Fukushima Daiichi. It's a definition of insanity. TEPCO, this is all yours. You are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
Speaking of hot meals, food comes up regularly in Numbnuts of the Week and provides a good perspective on just how crazy the Japanese behavior remains around the topic of Fukushima as a place to grow its food. Here's an example from January 20th of 2015, Nuclear Hot Seat number 187. And just to make things a little bit easier, we are going to dispense with the repeats on the opening theme, as I figure that's going to get old really fast. Let's just jump into the story. Thanks to Fukushima Diary for this tasty tidbit. On Friday, the 9th of January, Panasonic announced they are going to reuse a Fukushima factory as a vegetable plant. The Fukushima factory used to manufacture digital cameras, but seeing that that particular technology died in the age of smartphones, Panasonic decided to be subsidized by the Ministry of Economy, Trade, and Industry to support the restoration of Fukushima by reusing the factory as a vegetable plant. That just sounds redundant, vegetable plant. Panasonic cites the lighting and air conditioning already in place for the effective and efficient cultivation of vegetables. They plan to produce highly modified plants, highly modified as in GMOs, doesn't say here. They plan to produce highly modified plants such as, dig it, low potassium lettuce for kidney disease. And you can catch kidney disease, such as kidney cancer, by exposure to radiation, which could come from the Fukushima-based vegetable plant. Now, radioactive contamination is never mentioned in the announcement by Panasonic. Of course not. I'm surprised they didn't go into a lecture about the 2020 Tokyo Olympics just to prove how patriotic they're being. And it is not known what kind of radiation testing, if any, will be applied to the bright, 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 possibly glowing in the dark, green, leafy vegetables of the plant. And that's why Panasonic is this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
In Nuclear Hot Seat number 187 from January 20th of this year, we learned that the fastest way to guarantee the safety of rice grown in Fukushima Prefecture is to crunch the numbers and declare it safe. For the first time since the triple meltdown began at Fukushima Daiichi in 2011, that prefecture is claiming victory over rice. Yes, that's right. They are saying that every bag of rice produced in Fukushima Prefecture last year cleared the required radiation tests. Officials are saying that in 2014, the use of fertilizers based on potassium chloride, which prevents the grain from absorbing the isotope cesium, are what created this magical change in the food supply. Well, it's true, there is a principle called selective uptake, where having the right amount of a certain nutrient will stop the uptake of a radionuclide from the ground into a plant or into specific organs or systems in the human body. Potassium chloride in the soil does seem to block the uptake of cesium into rice plants. However, that may not be exactly the same thing as saying the rice is safe. First of all, it bases its assumption on the fact that all the bags tested below 100 becquerels of cesium per kilogram and believing that that level makes it safe to eat. It ignores the fact that 100 becquerels per kilogram in anything used to make it be considered nuclear waste. So the all-safe siren may have been sounding a wee bit prematurely. Then there was the suspected practice of mixing rice that may have measured above the 100 becquerels per kilogram of cesium with rice that measured below that level. And in mixing up the high and the low, when you average it out and measure the bag, ta-da! It comes out below the necessary breaking point. Doesn't mean that there might not be some hot, hot, hot little particles in there in your little individual grains of rice, but there's no way to know because, hey, they averaged it out. And a third thing for you to consider is that all that's being tested for is cesium. What about the other radionuclides? What about plutonium, strontium, americium, all the others? If you don't test for it, it doesn't show up, and so the assumption is that the rice is fine to eat. Well, for now, I'm planning to steer clear of any rice that is grown in Fukushima Prefecture. And quite frankly, in my humble opinion, if you decide it's okay to eat rice grown in Fukushima, then congratulations, you, yes, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
Sometimes the numbnutsery is running so thick that I have more than one story to choose from. And when they seem to be related, well, then you get two for the price of one. These are from Nuclear Hot Seat number 210 from June 30th, 2015. It's a compound numbnuts this week because I couldn't make up my mind. Reuters had a report last week that was headlined, "Handling Radioactive Waste at Fukushima Plant Could Be Improved." Ya think?
But then they added that this was according to a UN agency. And what do they call a UN agency? The International Atomic Energy Agency, which it labeled a United Nations nuclear watchdog. No, it's a United Nations nuclear industry guard dog, because that's what it's there to do, to guard the nuclear industry. And what, pray tell, is the vast improvement that the IAEA is suggesting for Tokyo Electric Power Company? That they should consider discharging radioactive water contaminated by the Fukushima Daiichi reactor meltdowns directly into the Pacific Ocean intentionally. These nuclear brainiacs from the IAEA believe it is necessary to find a sustainable solution to the problems of managing contaminated water. And that includes dumping the stuff directly into the Pacific beyond what's already leaking in and has been leaking for more than 4 years. And yet Japan is outraged over the continuing ban on Japanese seafood exercised by China, North Korea, Singapore, Taiwan, and New Zealand. Previous releases of Fukushima contamination into the Pacific have drawn protests by Japanese fishermen, environmental groups, and even the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute has declared that contamination from Fukushima has been measured off the western coasts of the United States and Canada. And it ain't going away any human span of existence soon. But wait, there's more. Remember the rice being grown in the evacuation zone near Namie? Well, it turns out TEPCO is going to remove the cover from the destroyed Fukushima reactor, a cover that was never meant to and certainly did not contain the radiation. It was merely put up to prevent the radioactive dust from spreading all over the surrounding country. And they're taking it off exactly when the rice is being planted in the evacuation zone. I'm telling you, TEPCO and the IAEA, with a side order of Reuters, are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
Of course, once all that Fukushima rice has been grown and harvested, it needs to be utilized. So here's a clever way to drown your radiation fears while you down your radiation. From episode number 207 on June 9th. Care to drown your sorrows in some award-winning sake with that indefinable something that gives it an edge? Well, Fukushima Prefecture's got what you want because their artisanal producers won the most grand prizes in the annual Japan Sake Awards. This for the third straight year since 4 years ago the nuclear disaster began in their backyard. 24 of the 222 brands awarded grand prizes came from breweries in the disaster-hit prefecture and were made with locally grown rice. Those spirits helped to lift the spirits of brewers still struggling with the effects of the nuclear accident, or maybe just helping them to forget the radiologic nightmare that they have found themselves in the middle of. To anyone who buys and drinks this sake, congratulations! You are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
Now, it's no good to have a product that you're using to promote food safety and not be able to demonstrate its desirability to key taste-making demographics everywhere. So Japan's nuclear partners have found the perfect stooges, the perfect representatives to promote their Fukushima region agricultural products, such as, well, this one. From February 3rd, 2015, Nuclear Hot Seat number 189. Ah, pity the poor ambassadors. Because when it comes to keeping up appearances on behalf of their countries, they have no choice, even when it comes to possibly ingesting radionuclides. In Japan last week, ambassadors of four Commonwealth nations, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and Britain, attended a government event in Tokyo to support food from the disaster-stricken Fukushima prefecture. They were served and chowed down on rice balls and other tasty morsels
based on foods that were grown in that radiologically contaminated prefecture. The January 27 event was organized by the Farm Ministry in an effort to promote exports of Fukushima goods, which have remained stagnant since the nuclear accident triggered by the 2011 earthquake and tsunami, which are the only causes mentioned in the article. They very clearly avoid mention of all things radiological. The envoys were served onigiri rice balls made from grain harvested in the prefecture, beef from cows raised nearby, and washed everything down with Fukushima-produced Ginjo Premium Sake. Nothing like a little alcohol to help you forget what it is you're actually eating. Now, New Zealand, Australia, and Canada had lifted import restrictions on products from Fukushima Prefecture by January of 2014. And Britain allows imports as long as a government-issued radioactive material inspection certificate is submitted. There's nothing here about which government does the inspecting and what the standards are for inspection, but it's probably the 100 becquerels of cesium per kilogram, which is legal in Japan but used to be considered radioactive waste. However, agricultural products produced in Fukushima Prefecture are still widely shunned in overseas markets. 12 nations and regions, including Fukushima Prefecture's former key export destinations of Hong Kong, Taiwan, and China, still fully or partially ban imports of foods from the prefecture. Of course, here in the United States, we not only don't ban it, we accept food that is 12 times more contaminated than the food that is allowed in Japan. Their limit is 100 becquerels of cesium per kilogram of food. Here in the U.S., it's 1,200. And U.S. manufacturers don't have to list where their food stuff comes from. So it could be mixed in with any manufactured products, and probably is already. As for those four extremely loyal to their country ambassadors, after their good Fukushima-based snacks, let's hope that they signed up for an epidemiological study. 3 to 5 years for thyroid cancer or leukemia to show up, 12 to 15 years for hard tumors, and it goes on after that. Let's track these guys and find out what happens to them after consuming this food. And that's why Farm Ministry of Japan, oh, you who produced this event, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
And just in case you think that it's only British ambassadors who faced Fukushima food issues, sometimes the friendly skies are not all that friendly. From episode number 192, February 24th, 2015. Nobody likes airplane food, but All Nippon Airways, ANA, has taken its in-flight meals to a new depth by creating an unholy alliance with the locavore movement. That's right. In their marketing, they feature local food from all around Japan and have just announced that they are going to be serving ingredients produced in Fukushima. If you fly with ANA between this March to May, you might want to avoid certain foods that are known to be sourced from Fukushima, including peaches, tomatoes, beef, and 12, count them, 12 kinds of local Japanese rice wine, which will be served in their lounges during international flights. But even if you're not flying internationally, you don't need to feel deprived, because a local Fukushima newspaper reported that locally produced tomatoes will also be served for in-flight meals as part of the flights in Europe, North America, and Singapore. Strangely enough, this particular factoid is not mentioned on ANA's website for some reason. I wonder what that might be. 100 becquerels of cesium per kilogram of food is considered legal in Japan. So if you're going to be flying with ANA from March to May, chow down, have a good time, and let the cancer clock in the back of your brain in the epidemiological study of your life begin. And that's why this week, All Nippon Airways is
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
One of the most hotly propagandized examples of nuclear numbnuts has been the 2020 radioactive Tokyo Olympics, or as I now call them, the 2020 Tokyo No-Olympics. It's not bad enough that Tokyo is only 175 miles from Fukushima and that radioactivity has been found in its tap water, among many other proven sources of radiation contamination. But despite international concerns about Fukushima radiation, the stability of the damaged reactors in the face of earthquakes and tsunamis, construction cost overruns, design scandals, and voices from around the world shouting, "Don't touch it! It's evil!" Japan has continued to insist upon its right to irradiate the world's finest athletes, along with their coaches and fans. From episode number 197, March 31st, 2015.
By now, we all know that Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, baby, lied to the International Olympic Committee when he told them that the contaminated water problem at Fukushima was under control and was entirely blocked within the area of the Fukushima nuclear plant. But what you might not be aware of is that in March of 2014, in the House of Counselors in Japan, Abe stated that there was an international political atmosphere that if Japan was not capable of settling contaminated water problems, it should not be allowed to host the 2020 Olympics. That sounds sane and reasonable, doesn't it? So to counteract that, Abe said that he saw it as his responsibility to remove such an atmosphere by saying the situation is under control. However, to him, that does not mean any more to him than he was in charge of reviewing the contaminated water situation. That's right. There is no problem if you close your eyes and put your fingers in your ears and go, la, 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 it's okay, now give us those Olympics. Oh, why don't you just define what the word is? Your job, Abe, was to tell the truth to the world's premier athletes so that they would not be subjected to the kind of radiation that you are seeking to subject them to. This is evil, numbnuts, of the most evil type. Lying for commercial gain while putting the future health and wellness of the best and brightest physical specimens on Earth at risk. And that is why, Shinzo Abe, in your black-hearted soul, you are now and forever
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
So Prime Minister Abebebe's minions continue to act like it's business as usual for the No-Olympics, provoking this Numbnuts of the Week from episode number 223 on September 29th, 2015. Toshiaki Endo, who is the Japanese minister for the Tokyo Olympics in 2020, said on Tuesday, September 29th, that locations outside of Tokyo, including disaster-hit Fukushima Prefecture, should host five proposed sports if they are added to the program of the 2020 Games in Tokyo. These five sports are baseball for men and softball for women, karate, skateboard, sports climbing, and surfing. Surfing in the ocean outside of Fukushima. What could go wrong? Endo has been advocating Fukushima's hosting of the Olympic events as a way to highlight the region's reconstruction from the 2011 earthquake and tsunami, while not bothering to mention the still ongoing crisis with the melted down nuclear reactors that are still bubbling away there on the coast. Endo said, "I'd like to make a request for baseball or softball qualifying rounds to be held in regional towns and cities if possible. Here's my request to the International Olympic Committee. Do not, repeat, not sanction these sports for the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. I'm sorry, my apologies to the athletes, but if you value your life and your genetic future, it's just not worth a hunk of metal hung on a cord around your neck, no matter what color that metal may be. And that's why you, Toshiaki Endo,
And probably even you, the International Olympic Committee, are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
This brings to mind Japan's former ambassador to Switzerland, Mitsuhei Murata, who has called for his country to take an honorable retreat from the 2020 Olympics because of Fukushima's dangers. He speaks to this eloquently on Nuclear Hot Seat number 234 from December 15 of 2015 and is the opposite of numbnuts. We'll continue with this numbnuts of the year 2015 in just a moment. But first, there's still time to make a year-end donation to support the work of Nuclear Hot Seat. Or if you prefer, you can just start the new year on the right foot by sending us a donation to set us on our way. If you care about honest, vetted information on nuclear issues, make Nuclear Hot Seat one recipient of your giving. It will go far to support the work that we do to bring you the most up-to-date information on nuclear issues from around the world. We make it easy for you to donate. Simply go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the big red donate button. You can donate either through PayPal or directly from your credit or debit card. And if you prefer not to donate online, you can email us at info@nuclearhotseat.com and you will get a snail mail address where you can send your donation the old-fashioned way. Whatever you can do to help, no donation is too small. And we thank you with deep gratitude for everything you have done to keep this show going through 2015 and look forward to your help in 2016 and beyond. And now,
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
The United States is, of course, a world leader in nuclear numbnutsery, as each week's episode points out in story after story. It's business as usual, the new normal. However, some pieces of U.S. nuclear behavior can only be characterized as extreme numbnuts, much of which is sourced from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Here's an example of NRC sleight of hand from episode number 219 on September 2nd, 2015. This time, it's numbnuts plus the duck and cover report because the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the NRC, has rejected the recommendations of its own high-level task force, the one that it convened after the March 11, 2011 Fukushima disaster began, their recommendation to require nuclear plant owners to develop and maintain plans for coping with a core melt accident. That's right. The NRC is saying, don't worry about it. You don't have to make any plans. This decision is going to allow nuclear plants to continue to operate those plans voluntarily and deny the agency the authority to review those plans or issue citations if they are deficient. That's right. The fox is in charge of the hen house, and the unsupervised inmates are running the asylum. According to Edward Lyman, a senior scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists, once again, the NRC is ignoring a key lesson of the Fukushima accident. Emergency plans are not worth the paper they are printed on unless they are rigorously developed, maintained, and periodically exercised. When it comes to these critical safety measures, the NRC is allowing the industry to regulate itself. The nuclear industry, led by its premier trade organization and slime mold, the Nuclear Energy Institute, NEI, opposed the proposal, arguing that the proposal did not meet a strict cost-benefit standard. That's right, it costs too much to make plans and maintain them in case of a core melt, so whatever, the odds are that it won't happen, so we don't really need to take care of it. And thus, rejecting its own staff's recommendations, the NRC commissioners voted in favor of the industry and against the public interest. Obviously, they've never heard the axiom of emergency preparedness: hope for the best and plan for the worst. In this case, the worst is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which once again is this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
We here at Nuclear Hot Seat take a special ongoing interest in the queen of evil numbnuts herself, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Gina, never met a nuke I didn't like and cover for, McCarthy. Many actions by the EPA are too incompetent or evil to qualify for numbnuts, but sometimes we manage to get them in. Here's one example from Nuclear Hot Seat number 216. The White House has given final approval for dramatically raising permissible radioactive levels in drinking water and soil following radiological incidents, such as a nuclear power plant accident or a dirty bomb. That's right. Everybody knows radiation hurts you less if it's an emergency. The adrenaline must counteract it. Not. The nuclear industry is touting this as a big win for what they're calling the new normal, and what looks to the rest of us like it's just going through the looking glass into bizarro world. This new protective action guide, or PAG, is the brainchild of Gina, never met a nuke I didn't like and cover the ass of McCarthy, the assistant administrator for air and radiation, whose nomination to serve as EPA administrator, oh my gosh, is taken up this week by the Senate. And I hope they drop it just as fast. According to Jeff Rush, executive director for PEER, which stands for Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, the EPA package lacks cogent rationale, is largely impenetrable, and hinges on a series of euphemistic weasel words. In short, he said, this is a public health policy only Dr. Strangelove could embrace. Dr. Strangelove and Gina McCarthy. And you, Gina, along with your EPA, are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
The assault on how radiation dangers are measured is one of the most dangerous long-term tactics taken by pro-nuclear forces. Still, there are ways to frame it within the Numbnuts universe. This story fills in the entire radiation battle picture while taking what was once a great gray lady to task. From episode 222, on September 22. I am so mad at the New York Times, I don't know whether they should be embarrassed or ashamed. In an article in today's paper, which really should have been an op-ed and labeled as such, but they put it in the science section, and it's labeled, When Radiation Isn't the Real Risk. And it comes slam dunk out on the side of Hormesis theory, and gee, isn't linear no threshold old science, bad old. This is America. Nothing's supposed to get old. And science isn't supposed to get old because new science is better science. Oh, screw you. This article first posited that more damage and more deaths were caused by the evacuation from Fukushima than radiation ever has or ever will. The unattributed article even wrote, even among Fukushima workers, the number of additional cancer cases in coming years is expected to be so low as to be undetectable, a blip impossible to discern against the statistical background noise. Considering the way Japan has already rigged the fact that they're not taking into account radiation risks and problems, they're threatening doctors with loss of hospital privileges if they report on any illnesses connected to radiation. That according to Dr. Helen Caldicott, it will take between 12 and 15 years before hard tumors and cancer cases even start to appear, at which case nobody will be looking for them anyway, and they certainly won't attribute them back to Fukushima. The Times just kept going with the International Atomic Energy Agency's party line. Even worse, the only person, the only quote-unquote expert who is interviewed in this entire article is Dr. Mohan Das, a medical physicist who is one of the three petitioners to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to do away with the linear no-threshold model, which states that any dose of radiation is impactful to our health, has a negative impact on our health, and that the effect is cumulative based on how much we get exposed to. Small dose, big dose, makes no difference, it all adds up, which has been the standard for the last several decades. It has been reviewed and passed muster with scientists in all the iterations of the Beer report, the Beer 7 report it's up to now, Biological Effects of Ionizing Radiation. But does the great gray lady of the New York Times even let Linear No Threshold get an airing? Does it quote even once Dr. John Goffman? Ian Fairley, whose recent studies have shown the effect of radiation on children living near nuclear reactors? Dr. Helen Caldicott, who can cite chapter and verse, and so many others. No! All they do is quote this Mohan Das, who claims that at Fukushima, fear of radiation killed more people than radiation. This was a propaganda piece. It should have been labeled as an op-ed and placed there. And if you're wondering how they got away with it, go online and check Linear No Threshold Model. Check Wikipedia and see how the entry has been absolutely subverted to be a clarion call for hormesis as opposed to an honest explanation of what LNT is all by itself. Maybe, just maybe, this article is the reason why the Nuclear Regulatory Commission decided to give more time for comments on the hormesis proposal so they could rally the troops and whip up the froth and get their people going to make more comments, more stupid comments, based on false, lying, propagandistic non-science. The battleground is radiation. Whoever controls the interpretation of what radiation does to our bodies is the one who controls the entire discourse internationally on what nuclear is, what it does, and who can get away with what. And that's why you, New York Times, for this heinous piece of non-reporting, for this piece of propagandistic feces, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
Scientists, researchers, and doctors can often have a big old nuclear blind spot when it comes to seeing the forest for the trees or the cause for the disease. From Nuclear Hot Seat number 185 on January 6th, 2015. Two researchers from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore recently published a breakthrough, crucial study in the journal Science, which states that the reason behind cancer, two-thirds of all cancer cases, is biological bad luck. Yes, that's right. According to oncologist Dr. Bert Vogelstein, and this is a direct quote, "When someone gets cancer, immediately people want to know why. And the real reason in many cases is not because you didn't behave well or were exposed to some bad environmental influence. It's just because that person was unlucky. It's like losing the lottery." Dude, I don't recall anyone buying scratchers in the cancer lottery. Then his partner, biomathematician Christian Tomasetti, chimed in to say that harmful mutations occur for, quote, "no particular reason other than randomness," end quote. Well, isn't that special? Neither one of these experts, and you can put that word in quotes, bothered to mention the R word, radiation, which has a known, proven side effect of causing cancer. Joseph Mangana, executive director of radiation and public health and a frequent guest on this show, said, "This may be the worst research I've ever seen. Two-thirds of cancer cases are biological bad luck, when genes mutate randomly and have nothing to do with lifestyles or environment. Gee, does that mean we should move closer to Fukushima? Smoke more cigarettes?" No, Joe. It means that we need to find out who funded this lying piece of quote-unquote research and what their ultimate motivation may have been. And that's why you, Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland, are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat Numbnuts of the Week.
American Nuclear Numbnutsery believes that once you've contaminated an area with radiation that cannot be successfully and completely remediated, what better action to take than turn it into a public recreation area? That's what they're doing at the Rocky Flats Superfund Site Wildlife Refuge in Colorado. But even better from the numbnuts' perspective, let's commemorate the nuclear trash heap we've made of wide swaths of America by officially conflating the unnatural with the natural. From episode number 230 on November 17. Ah, the U.S. national parks. Those last bastions of nature, preserved virtually intact in all their splendor for generation upon generation to enjoy. The Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, Sequoia, Denali, the Manhattan Project. Manhattan Project? That's right. As of last Tuesday, November 10, Energy Secretary Ernest Moni Moniz and Interior Secretary Sally Jewell signed an agreement creating the Are You Ready? Manhattan Project National Historical Park. Nothing like a site that commemorates the creation of the most deadly technology on Earth and that still poisons millions with enough unremediated radioactive crapola to make John Muir want to roll over in his grave. But wait, did I say sites? Nay, I err. How about sites? That's right, three, count them, three separate sites. Y-12 in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where uranium for the bombs was separated. The Hanford site in Washington State, where plutonium was manufactured from that uranium. And Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, where it all came together and the bomb was designed and assembled and got that plutonium ready to be put to good use. It's the trifecta of nuclear nightmares, all being created as an historic monument to commemorate one of the worst experiences in the history of the human race. Even more bizarre, last week, the Interior Department convened a private scholars forum of 21 experts from across the United States and Japan, those happy recipients of this technology that's being commemorated. And so many people have first-hand knowledge of the subject of these sites. This scholars forum was brought together with the aim of bolstering the credibility of how the government will tell the story of the Manhattan Project. Oh, yes, do get Japan's input to this, especially the Hibakusha. Addressing a briefing at the State Department that was packed with Japanese news media, Vic Knox, a facilities and planning official at the National Park Service, said the Manhattan Project Park is, quote, being created to remember and learn from this event, which changed the history of the world. He neglected to add, not for the better. But here's the thing. The National Park Service Organic Act of 1916 has as its mission, and here I quote, to promote and regulate the use of the national parks, which purpose is to conserve the scenery and the natural and historic objects and the wildlife therein, and to provide for the enjoyment of the same in such manner and by such means as will leave them unimpaired for the enjoyment of future generations. So, what kind of enjoyment can we find if we go to one of these three sites? No trees. No breathtaking natural vistas. No waterfalls or wilderness. No wildlife. No dispersed camping either, and don't you dare take a souvenir rock because you never know where it's been or what it's been. Just an unnatural national park filled with propaganda and commemorating grief. Pro-nuclear forces in our government who backed this proposal to its current place have no shame, no empathy, no heart. And that's why everyone behind this travesty of the intention of the National Park Service is this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
There are many other examples of nuclear numbnutsery that we don't have time to fit in, but I would be remiss if I didn't include this example of wrong-headed, misplaced capitalism at its most blatant. It comes from Nuclear Hot Seat number 217 from August 18, 2015. Of all the many solemn remembrances of the 70th anniversary of the United States dropping atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, two of the darkest actions in the history of the world. There had to be at least one numbnuts, and his name is David Bailey. Bailey, who claims to have once been an engineer at the Sellafield nuclear facility in England and is staunchly pro-nuclear, said he felt the need to commemorate the anniversary of these two nuclear disasters. So he named a beer for them. That's right. Bailey, who became the founder of Hard Knot Brewery, has named his latest beer Nuclear Sunset. How does this idiot justify this move? He claims he wanted to recognize the tragedy that marked the dawn of the nuclear age. And what better way to mark the events that caused the death of approximately 250,000 people than to name some alcohol after it? Alcohol to numb your response to these horrific events. Bailey went on to say, "This beer was brought out to commemorate the awful loss of life during the first and only military deployment of nuclear weapons." He must have been using his own product because there were two incidents. Hiroshima was first, Nagasaki was second. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, two hard knot, two bombs, two military deployments, two inflictions of misery beyond anything the world had ever seen to that point and has seen since. It is despicable that you would bring out a beer and not only call it Nuclear Sunset, but include the subtitle, Disarmingly Peaceful Wit. No, you half-wit. That, even that is a compliment to you. This is the definition of tone-deaf, atrocious bad taste. And that is why you, David Bailey, and your stupid, insipid beer are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
There are many more examples we could have cited. That's why each week we present a new Numbnuts of the Week, as well as stories that are Numbnuts inspired, Numbnuts adjacent, or just simply nuts. Now, it is my honor to announce the winner of the first ever Nuclear Hot Seat Numbnuts of the Year. And the winner is the entire nuclear industry. That's right, the whole shebang. From the shovel in the ground that digs up uranium to leaking containers that house dangerous radioactive waste that must be stored for hundreds of thousands of years. This is an industry that smears nuclear feces all over like a mindless infant with no concern, consideration, conscience, empathy, or sense of responsibility. They make an ultimate mess and then leave all of us to live with the consequences because nobody is capable of cleaning it up. Nukers get away with it because, in an odd way, radioactive material cooperates with them. Radiation is invisible, tasteless, odorless, can't be detected with normal human senses. Out of sight, out of mind, et voila! All kinds of lies and misdirections can and do take place to convince us that nukes and even radiation are good for us. And those of us who try to make sense out of it all, to warn the world of these dangers while there's still a chance that we can take effective action against it, are dismissed by those in power as kooks or tree-hugging aging hippies who don't know what we're talking about because they are the experts, not us. Well, you all know what I think about those nuclear so-called experts. They are permanently despoiling the only planet we've got. It's not just the accidents at Fukushima, Chernobyl, Three Mile Island. It's all of the reactors that leak all of the time. It's the Nevada test site and Hanford, the Marshall Islands, Kudankulam, Port Arthur, Indian Point, Mayak, Palomares, Westlake Landfill, Savannah River Site, Sellafield, Dewell, and so many more. It's tailings and radiation left out in the open to go where it will, left over from uranium mining and exploration sites in Saskatchewan, the American Southwest, South Africa, Niger, Australia, Angola, Botswana, and now that uranium has been found there, Bangladesh. It's nuclear bombs on never-ending high alert, and bombs lost in the ocean from fighter jet crashes, and depleted uranium weapons used to spread radiation on the ground in order to poison the eggs and sperm and future of those who live in Iraq. It's the highly radioactive, plutonium-contaminated nuclear waste with a half-life of 24,000 years that results from every nuclear reactor that is or ever was, housed in overcrowded water pools on site, or dry casks not expected to last more than 20 years. It's the never-ending accumulation of radioactive waste, waste, and more waste, with no place to put it, no way to neutralize it, and no attempt by any powers that be to entice our best and brightest minds to figure out any way to make that radiation go flat and powerless. We are all at risk. We are all downwinders. To use the Japanese term for survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we are all hibakusha. But what members of the nuclear industry and their supporters don't yet seem to grasp is that they're fouling their own nests, too. Messing up their own homes, screwing up their own futures. Unless these people are secretly descended from some alien race that thrives on radiation and is turning Earth into their vacation destination, or they have some connections to a wormhole that leads to a duplicate planet in another dimension, and they have the technology to get there, or they've already bought their land and built their underground bunkers in the wilds of New Zealand, these people are destroying their own futures as well as ours. Maybe we won't live to see it all come down, and it will be our children, or their children, or grandchildren, they should be so lucky to get born, who will face this ultimate nuclear destiny. But if the birth defects in Chernobyl and Fallujah are any indication of what's in store for humanity, maybe these kids would be luckier not to get born. Nuclear makes no sense. Nuclear is not sane. Nuclear itself is numbnuts incarnate. This year, every year, until the day 480,000 years from now, when plutonium finally goes flat. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, December 29, 2015. Thanks to Nuclear Hot Seat listener and graphic designer extraordinaire Laura Lynch for her suggestion that we close the year with our first ever Numbnuts retrospective. Theme music written by me, sung by Marilee Weber, accompaniment by John Barnard, recorded at Winslow Court Studio in Hollywood. Nuclear Hot Seat is syndicated by UCY.TV. It's available on StuWebRadioNetwork.com, which is formerly the Veterans Truth Network, and we are syndicated in New Zealand by NewsSentinel.com. That's NewsSentinel.com. The show is also available on iTunes under podcasts. And our venerable archive of more than 230 episodes is available on the website NuclearHotSeat.com, on our YouTube channel under Nuclear Hot Seat Videos, and on iTunes. Acknowledging Joni Ray and Ms. Milky the Clown for their invaluable help with the videos. Nuclear Hot Seat is the activist voice on nuclear issues. So if you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. We are copyright 2015, Libby Halevy and Hardestry Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed as long as proper attribution is provided. This is Libby Halevy of Hardestry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that, according to Numbnuts of the Week number 210 from June 30th, the Pentagon considers me a belligerent journalist of unprivileged persuasion. I think I'll go get that printed on a t-shirt. And remember, we've all had our nuclear wake-up call. So don't go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear hot seat.